I must prestellar core. After he did the first postdoctoral position at Grenoble, and now he is doing a postdoctoral position in Mexico at UNAM, where he is working on the formation of a massive protocluster from ALMA data. So today, I assume he will present part of his work. So thank you, Thomas. If you want to start your presentation, let's go.
Thank you for the introduction. So it's a pleasure to present my work and our work, because I will also talk today about the ALMA-MF large program. So to understand how stars get their mass and the origin of the IMF, we need to go back to this question. Until recently, the well-accepted paradigm in our field was that we would have an universal IMF, so the IMF being the mass distribution of stars, and its form would come directly from the mass distribution of cores, so the CMF, core mass function. And especially the high mass slope of the IMF, the famous Salpeter slope, would be directly linked to the slope of the CMF. And so the consequence that cores would be the direct mass reservoirs of stars. So this was a bit the idea until recently, but now we have many reasons to question this idea of a direct relation between the CMF and the IMF. So I came up with this summary in 3 points. The first thing is that some observations suggest variation in the IMF. Especially in young massive clusters close to the galactic centers. The second point is that this relation of a direct relation relies on several fragile hypotheses. And what I mean here is that when we say the shape of the IMF directly comes from that of the CMF, we are making various assumptions that have been challenged over the years. For instance, we are assuming that cores are the unique mass reservoirs available from stars, and we are also assuming, for instance, that we have a constant gas-to-star mass efficiency. And the third point is that there are observational biases in the measurements of the CMF, in the sense that most of the CMF that have been observed from cores over the past 20 years have been built from relatively low mass cores in nearby star forming region. And this aspect in particular is very important for us observers. And three or four years ago, we started to address this point using ALMA and observing further star forming region called W43MM1. So using ALMA observation at 1.3 millimeter, we found this core mass function with a slope significantly flatter than the canonical IMF. So the reference being here -1.35, we found a slope of -0.96. And we can call this distribution top AV, and in other words, that means that we have an overabundance of high mass cores compared to the reference. So, and importantly also, we found this slope up to mass of 100 of solar masses. So this is for the first time we are able to get this on a large range of masses. So after our study, other study confirmed that we can see some variation in the CMF from studies of single protocluster, or also from many studies combining different cores in different parts of the galaxy. So how can we understand those first results? First, if we conserve this constant efficiency to form stars, we would have in this region a typical IMF, and here top AV IMF. And as I said before, it has been observed, so it's a first possibility. Or if we want to look over the Salpeter slope of the IMF, we need to assume that the CMF will evolve with time. And we can, for instance, assume that new episode of core formations will make the slope steeper, or also that subfragmentation or multiplicity can play a role, but keeping in mind that we can also expect variation in the other direction if the cores continue to grow in mass. So this was a bit where we stand a few years ago. And with that in mind, as observers, to understand this question, we need to explore different environments in the Milky Way and look for temporal variation of the CMF. And to do this in an homogeneous way, a large program with ALMA, which is the only observatory giving us the sufficiently high angular resolution, a large program with ALMA was the key to address this question. So the ALMA IMF large program is a cycle 5 project observed in 2017-2018. And what large program means is that we add observations of 15 clouds here, selected to be among the most massive protocluster of the Milky Way from the Atlas Gal sample. We have observation in two bands, band 6 at 1.3 millimeter and band 3 at 3 millimeter, enabling us to observe both strong lines such as CO, SIO, or N2H+, and also with spectral window dedicated to the study of the continuum. And you can find in this table a summary of the main lines that we were hoping to detect with our spectral configuration. So regarding the spatial configuration, the strategy was to construct large mosaic in order to observe not only the center of the region, but also their surroundings. And we use both the 12 meter and the 7 meter, so the extended and the compact array configuration, with also the goal to have a rather uniform spatial resolution of about 2000 AU. And the two first papers of ALMA-IMF will shortly come. The first one is the overview paper by Frédéric Mott, and the second one, the presentation of the data continuum led by Adam Ginsburg. So ALMA-IMF now, it's also a large number of people. Currently, we are at about 80 people in 11 countries. And so regarding the cloud, the region that we observed, you have here the list separated in three categories: young, intermediate, and evolved. And this classification has been made based on two indicators. The first one is the 1 to 3 millimeter flux ratio, and the second one is the free emission from a line such as H41 alpha. And you can see represented in this picture in green the location of the ALMA-IMF clouds. And you can see that compared to previous study, we are probing larger distances between 2 and 5.5 kiloparsecs. You have here representing the local solar neighborhood with the Gulbet clouds and up to 3 kiloparsecs, another Herschel study, the OBIS study. Regarding the core extraction, we produced two types of continuum maps. The first one that we called the cleanest was made to have a reduced light contamination, selecting only a fraction of the bandwidth available. and the second one that we called BestSense for best sensitivity, because we select all the bandwidths in order to achieve the maximal sensitivity. And for the construction itself, we compared two algorithms. The first one is GetSF, developed by Alexander Menshikov, which is the successor of the GetSources algorithm. And the second one is GetX2D, which is developed by Sylvain Bontan, working a bit like the Qtex algorithm. For the 15 region, with the first shallow approach, with exclusion on the cleanest maps, we found about 700 cores with GetSF and a bit more with GetX2D. On the right there, you can see the mass versus size diagram showing that the typical size of our sample is indeed around 2,000-3,000 AU. But we are also probing a large range in mass from below one solar masses to 100 solar masses. And we can also see here that compared to other core samples from other studies, especially the actual study of Konivesh and collaborators, for instance, we have more dense cores in this region. Using this total core sample, you see here the first combined CMF with a very high statistics. We found again a slope significantly flatter than the Salpeter value. We are also trying to look for variation by evolutionary stage of the region. If you remember from the young to evolved region I was talking about. And here this is preliminary work, so work in progress, be careful with the results, but we could have a trend from closer to Salpeter slopes for more evolved region when compared to younger region. I will now move to the presentation of our first detailed study of ALMA EMF region, the W43 MM2 and MM3 protoclusters. So they are located in the same region as the W43 MM1 I was talking before. We are here in very dense region and very cold region. You see there the air shell column density and temperature map, and we are imaging here this inner part over there. So here is what the three color image of this region look like. So you can see that we have two main parts, MM2 and MM3. And on the image, we have the 1.3 millimeter continuum in red, and in blue is the H41 alpha line, so crossing free gas. In green, the 3 millimeter, we have a bit of both contribution. You can see that MM2 is classified as young and is dominating by thermal dust emission, while in MM3, that we classified as intermediate, we have already in blue here an ultra compact H2 region. So now there is a continuum map, so the 1.3 millimeter continuum image of the region with cores represented as ellipses and the separation that we did in subregions. So in total, using this time a more deeper approach regarding core extraction, using the BSense map and a technique developed by Jean-François Robitaille called MNG-SEG, we have been able to detect about 200 cores on the combined mosaics. And again, the core mass function that we get in this region is found to be top heavy with there a slope of minus 0.94. But what we can do now with this large statistic in a single region is to divide into subregions and look for variations between the different parts of the mosaic. And this is what Yuan Puto did. And there we found that indeed we have variations in the sense that the W43MM2, so this part is show an even flatter slope, while other region such as MM10, which is this intermediate filament here between MM2 and MM3, has a slope which is closer to the Salpeter value. So we start to see variation and see that star formation is not homogeneous. And what we propose there is that we could have a burst of star formation in MM2 only. And another way to understand the variation of the CMF is to separate protostellar core from prestellar core. So this is what I did using the CO 2-to-1 line. So you see now in gray, scale, the same continuum image as before, with overlap the blue and red contours associated to the blue and red shifted CO emission. For the moment, you only see high velocity CO emission. And using CO221, I've detected about 80 lobes, some of them being monopolar and other bipolar. And here the important part is the association between the outflow lobes and the cores. In total, there is 51 cores associated to outflows on this sample of 195. Some of them being also detected in hot cores with complex organic molecules. So to give you a more realistic view on the complexity in outflow identification, you now see CO at high velocity, but also at lower velocity with this orange and pale blue contours. Just to give you the sense of we can have complex data. We have complex data to interpret, and we have more things to understand there. But to come back to the comma functions, now that we can separate, we also see variations, and this time it's even more than spectacular, in this, because the prestellar core mass function only get consistent to Salpeter, while the mass function of the protostellar core only is even more flatter. However, an important thing to note is that the CMF of prestellar core is limited to 15 solar masses. And in other words, we do not detect high mass prestellar core. And actually this result is only an addition to many studies that found very difficult to detect high mass prestellar core. So what these results may say is that the burst of star formation I was mentioning before is mostly feeding protostellar cores, and only protostellar cores can grow sufficiently in mass and populate this part of the diagram. And finally, to try to connect a bit these results with the model of star formation, high mass star formation, I propose there a classification of the models in two families. The first one, which we could call the core-fed models, with a rather local mass reservoir to form stars, and the other one that we could call the clump-fed models, with a more dynamic and more large-scale mass reservoir. So what I think here is that clump-fed model with accretion from a larger scale mass reservoir and also allowing star formation to value with the core mass and core density could explain more easily what we see, that is a top heavy protostellar mass function. And with that, I will leave you with my conclusion. So I hope that I convince you that with ALMA-MF, we have really a great potential to investigate star formation in the different, so very both extreme and typical environment in the Milky Way with this 15 high mass protocluster at different evolutionary stages. The first shallow survey found about 700 cores, but we expect maybe two times that with our more in-depth approach. The two first articles with the continuum theories are incoming, so stay tuned if you are interested. I've also give you some first studies looking for variation of the CMF. So we found that in MM2, the excess of high mass core could be due to a local burst of star formation, and that only protostellar core seems to be involved. And you will find more about CMF in the first article in preparation from Yuan Puto and Fabien Louvet. And regarding the future and the perspective, we are currently working in ALMA-MF. We are focusing on LINE, and we start delivering LINE data to the consortium. We have also people interested in kinematics and chemistry, which are really essential to complement the study of cores themselves. I'm preparing an article using outflow to identify protostellar cores. And finally, you have here some ideas that we have to go further in the understanding of the variation of the CMF. And with that, thank you for your attention, and I will take questions.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Okay, you have question? Yeah, I see at least one question from Annie. So Annie, please.
Can you hear me, Thomas? Do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Sorry. Thanks for the nice talk. And I have, I think, two questions. The first one is about the time evolution of this high MF slope. Yeah. If you can come back to the image you showed on, W43. I was wondering, if the result, so you said that the second part of the, not this one, I'm thinking about the image, sorry. Yes, this one. No, the image of the region with the data. Yes, this one. So we can think on this one. So you said that, if I understood correctly, MM2 is expected to be younger than MF3. Yeah. Where an H2 region is clearly seen on MF3. And the fact that you have a lot of outflows and that seems to be well developed in MM2, I was wondering if this is in agreement with MM2 being younger. I don't know if my question is clear.
Yeah, I think I'm clear. Indeed, in this, using different information, we proposed in Yuan's article a possible classification, and indeed this H region point towards the fact that MM3 will be the more evolved, and maybe that after a possible burst of star formation, MM2 will be during the burst of star formation. And we will have around regions which are maybe not, which have not yet accrete, are not sufficiently dense or are still in a more quiescent way.
My point was really about the core, in fact, not the region themselves, but the core and the fact that the outflow activity seems to be much higher in the MM2 on the MM3. So not the H2 region, but the part of the cores that are observed at the edges of the H2 region. So I was wondering if this is compatible with the timescale
the possibility that I see is that probably the oldest cores in this region, if they have outflow, they may already be more difficult to observe with ALMA in the millimeter range. Probably the only outflow that you can see are outflow from relatively young cores, and that would explain why indeed we do not detect many outflows in MM3, which is supposed to be more evolved. But the link between the individual cores evolution and the classifications need to be studied, and this is an important thing to make the connection between the, let's say, the large scale properties and the individual cores, prestellar, protostellar, these things.
Thank you. And my second question was about the possible impact of the H2 region that you see in MF3 on the fragmentation. Did you see any differences in the fragmentation between the core that are observed in MM2 and the ones that are observed towards MM3?
So we are not able to really observe fragmentation at scale below, let's say, 2000 AU. But regarding for the moment, it's only some hypothesis. But we could have an impact on the cores located close to the H2 region. They seems to be more or less aligned, and we could see that could be an impact of the H2 region, which would have formed this newer generation of cores. So for the moment, we are only proposing this idea, and we do not have investigate more into detail if it is consistent. But for the moment, we are only get to it.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for the talk again.
Yeah, I see another question from Elfin, please.
Yes, it's me. I have one question. It is about the evolutionary status of the region. So here you present a young and an intermediate region. And what is an evolved region from your definition of evolution?
So in evolved region, we have not only here, it's only a localized ultracompact H2 region, but I don't think I kept all the circular image, but in the circular image of the more on the evolved region, we see really large fraction of the mosaic which free emission. So this is not only localized evolved region, but this is really large part of the region which has been already impacted by the meta formation.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for this talk. It is very interesting.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I see two other questions. So please, Jean, go.
Hi, yeah, thank you very much for the very nice talk. I'm wondering if the IMF slope depends on the quality of the imaging with the ALMA data. And if we look at, could you go back to the previous slide? Yeah, that one.
Sorry,
W43 image. Like the entire region?
This
the,
one?
The one we were looking at. Not the one, not this one, the whole thing. Yeah, this one. So there are a lot of dark parts. Are they left over from imaging process? So is there any possibility to find more robust cores in the extended region if you can recover the flux more properly?
I'm not sure I understand quickly your question, but organic core extraction, what we found is that in the, we are already, in a sense, going deeper in the data with the technique I mentioned. So we have already improved our completeness in the low mass parts. I don't think that we can, that with the available data, we can find, we can go toward really lower mass cores. We're already at with completeness around one solar masses or even below. But Okay. Was it your question or?
Yeah. Well, okay. The other way to ask the same question is: does the detection depend on the UV coverage with the terminology of radio interferometer?
Well, I don't think that on that aspect where it is not really a problem because what the scales that we are filtering are more larger scales, so it will not impact a compact emission. So in a detecting cores in interferometric image is not it can be problematic because we can have some artifacts, some side lobes, and so on. But for the core detection itself, it's not a problem.
Not a problem. Okay. Thank you very much.
I think Siju, you have a question as well.
Yes, and I just have a stupid question. So how do you transform from the continuum to the mass of the core in the reliable way, I mean?
So wait, I think I have somewhere, yes. So the classical way to calculate the mass using the mass of dust and using a gas to dust mass ratio. So we are just using the integrating flux of the core and the Planck function, dust opacity and so on. And the only new thing that we have here is that we have to take into account the optical thickness of the emission. So we have this, so we apply a correction for this. But yeah, this is what we do to get the mass.
So how you determine the core scale dust temperature? Core scale dust temperature.
Because
here you need the dust temperature.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so, temperature actually it's one of the main uncertainty for so what we. This time I don't have the image, but what we did is that we used temperature image at 2.5 arc second using the PPMAP method developed by Ken Marsh. So this is already quite an improvement because the Herschel temperature maps are at maybe 18 arc second resolution, okay. And we are at core resolution at 0.5 arc second. So we are already making a great progress using this technique. And then we are also making some local assumption, knowing that the core is protostellar, for instance, we will give him a higher temperature than prestellar cores. And with that, we can a bit adapt. This is a very tricky question. And this is a good.
Yeah, and do you have any uncertainty of the temperature measurements? So the percent, for example, like 50% or 40% for the temperature measurements?
Well, we Yeah, I would say that we have some 20-30% certainties or from course to course. But we are evaluating the uncertainty for each core. Typically we can say that a core is at like 30 Kelvin plus or minus let's say 5 Kelvin at 1 sigma, this kind of thing. So yes, this can play no role in the
Yes, because as far as I know, for the low temperature and for example like 10 to 20 Kelvin, just a few Kelvin temperature difference will create like 30 or 40% in mass. So I don't know if we don't have a reliable temperature measurement, the IMF we get or the CMF we get is reliable. So it seems it's very important to have a reliable temperature measurements for the coil.
Yeah, in the future we can still have the hope of using other tracer of temperature, for instance, ammoniac or that can give also information. But this is not this is not possible only with thermal observation. So we need a complementary project to get this.
It's impossible. It's possible to use the H2CO, H2CO to measure the temperature, the gas temperature.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, actually, we do have H2CO in our sample, so in our setup. So.
Yeah. Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other question. I think Annie, your hand is raised, but it was your question of before, I suppose. So if no one has another question, I think we can stop here. We can thank Thomas again, and we can stop here.
Okay.